Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Happy Friday. We are broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Jake Lyman, Connor Newt, Parker Kelly with you. Lots to talk about Micah Parsons in the first hour. We're going to talk some Titans here to start off hour number two. Andrew Allegretta will join us at the bottom of the hour to preview Vanderbilt's game against Charleston Southern tomorrow. And then again, we're spending the whole last hour just going through the games this weekend because there are a lot of them. We've got a couple of big ones tonight. We've got three big ones tomorrow. You could even say four if you want to include Tennessee and Syracuse in there.
Yeah, it's one of those Kentucky-Toledo.
Yeah, well, that was obviously at the top of the list.
That's the headliner. What are we talking about?
Kentucky is only 7.5-point favorites.
That's crazy.
At home
with
against
their
Toledo.
With their they made the wrong quarterback 34-year-old
quarterback.
Yeah, they did.
And then we got two games on Sunday and one on Monday. So we'll get through all of them coming up in the final hour of the show. But did want to spend some time on the Titans here. Brian Callahan yesterday updated the Titans' injury list, and J.C. Latham was still out of practice. He did say that he's hoping JC will be ready for week one. I thought it was great news that Tavondre Sweat is back at practice.
Mm-hmm.
I am concerned about how much he's going to be able to play in the thin air week one against Denver after missing so much time. But if he hadn't been back out there at practice yesterday, I think he would have been in danger of just missing the game altogether.
Yeah.
I think you can pretty much say he'll be active, he'll be ready, but you may not see him play 60% of the snaps. I think it may be closer to 40.
Yeah, but I think you need him out there in some capacity.
Right.
Just because you look at the Titans' defense and you look at the positional depth, not that they have depth on the tight end, or tight end, defensive tackle position, but Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat, I mean, those are two solid defensive tackles
that you
have on your
front line.
That's
what they've built their defense around.
Right.
Right? Like, they talk about how the edge group is fine. Like, yesterday I was shocked to hear Mike Borgonzi say that he feels good about the edge group, because I don't feel good about the edge group.
No.
Especially when they didn't use a waiver claim on one. Like, Jalen Harrell is your fifth edge rusher, and Jihad Ward is your fourth. Like,
you are putting a lot of trust in Femele Adejo.
Right. If Femele Adejo is just a project guy and he doesn't do a lot this year, you're not going to get to the quarterback very often. So you need Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat out there. And I think it is good news to hear that Sweat and I believe Ridley were both back at practice yesterday.
Yeah, it is. And Winston was out there too. Not that he matters as much as those two,
right?
Because I think he's just kind of a rotational safety right now, at least. He hopefully will develop into something more.
I think by the end of the year, you'll be seeing Winston out there a lot more. But yes, to start the year, I don't think you were as concerned about Kevin Winston. He doesn't need to be on the field.
Yeah.
But Tavondre Sweat does, especially with how thin you are at defensive line. I think the depth has gotten better. You bring in Shai Tuttle and Ravenel was one of the waiver claims.
Can we change his name, by the way?
Titanel. It'd be good. But you need Tavondre Sweat out there. That is, you spent an early second-round pick on that guy. He showed promise last year, but this was supposed to be a big year of growth for him. Missing most of training camp is concerning, but it's good to see that he's back out there at practice getting ready for week one.
Yeah, I mean, he had tonsillitis. So what I suggest for the Titans is to go to your local Denver Kroger, get a tub of Breyers ice cream, keep it in a cooler, and if he starts burning in the throat, just give him some of that.
There you go.
Send him right back out there.
Yeah. I mean, let the nutritionist take the day off with Tavondre Sweat. Just load him up with the ice cream.
Send me out there. I'll be like in quarterback. You remember when Marcus Mariota had like his own personal chef that just followed him around?
You're just going to have
be
a tub of ice cream behind Tavondre Sweat.
For Tavondre, I'll feed him ice cream and, you know, I'll grill for him and grill him some hot dogs or something.
There you go.
Corn on the cob. Here you go, Tavondre.
Big Sweat. I mean, I would think that a lot of it was just precautionary.
Yeah.
Keeping him out. And he had the abdominal injury earlier on. But he hadn't practiced in 3 weeks. So it's great that he's back out there. Again, the Titans, they've talked all offseason about, you know, we don't need great edge rushers because we can collapse the pocket from the interior. Well, in order to do that, you got to have Tavondre Sweat out there.
Yeah.
So, good news for the Titans. If you're going to have any chance to stay in that game with Denver, which I'm a little skeptical on,
Yeah,
you got to have your best players out there. And Tavondre Sweat at least will be. Legarius Sneed, after the waiver claims, I said this yesterday, I'm not confident he's going to be ready for week one.
No. They keep pushing out, Legarius especially, keeps pushing out that he fully plans on playing.
And maybe he'll be dressed
out. Maybe he will.
But I don't think you're going to see him on the field as your number one cornerback for week one.
No, it's
going
to be the Jarvis Brownlee show, I think.
Yeah.
And maybe some of your waiver claims get up there. Like, I liked the guy that they got from Indianapolis.
Yeah, Womack.
I thought the Ravens guy is the one I really like.
Yeah. Jalen Armour David, I feel like you got two guys who accomplish different goals for you. Yeah. Like, Womack is your more consistent guy. He played all 17 games last year. He's shown that he can produce in the NFL. Jalen Armour Davis is all about the potential. It's like, yeah, this guy hasn't been unlocked yet because he's been hurt. Maybe we can get him healthy and get him to his full potential. So,
which, you got the number one waiver claim, why not?
Right, and the fact that three other teams claim Jalen Armour Davis makes you feel good that that is a guy who was coveted around the league. Again, I'm not acting like he's going to step in and immediately be your number one cornerback.
No, I don't think you can expect that.
Maybe by the end of the year, he surpasses Daryl Baker as your top reserve at that position. And maybe he ends up starting if Legarius Sneed can't get through the full year.
I mean, look, this isn't fantasy football. You're not going in and, you know, filing a waiver claim for some guy, some, you know, all-pro player that some idiot just dropped.
Right.
These are guys that weren't good enough to make a roster. So I'm not saying that these corners aren't going to be solid pieces for the Titans. Maybe they are. But you also can't go in expecting them to be all-pro caliber players and just elevate your defense to another level, because that's not realistic.
Right. These guys were not good enough to make a 53-man roster.
Of them was cut from a contending team, a Super Bowl contending team in the Ravens. The Colts, they're the Colts. They're not very good. But, Armour Davis was cut from a contending team, and you can look at that and say, well, the Ravens have a lot of depth, especially on defense. You know, they got Kyle Hamilton in their secondary and all these guys, and he just was the odd man out. Or you can look at it and say, you know, he was a young prospect that they drafted, and he just didn't pan out for them. So, like it or not, he's on the team. I expect him to see some field time in week one, especially once he gets coverages down, which I think would be relatively easy for an NFL corner.
Yeah, corner is one of those positions where it's like, yeah, I'm sure the terminology is a little bit different, but like,
I mean, formations and stuff.
Right, but I don't think it's going to... Corner, you talk about guys being on an island. Obviously, you're not putting Jalen Armour Davis out there on an island with a receiver, but there's much less collaboration for a cornerback than there is for a linebacker or anybody on the offensive side of the football.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot.
Go cover that guy.
Yeah. Are you telling me to beat right him? Or no. You stand there, and if he catches the ball, then we're taking your ass out.
Yep.
That's how it is.
And I think it is telling about the Titans roster depth. Have you seen any Titans players that got cut get picked up anywhere else? I think I saw Josh Wiley is on the Packers practice squad.
That's the only one I saw.
No, one of them got picked up. Not James Proche, he's on the practice squad.
The Titans brought a lot of the guys they cut back on the practice squad.
Who got claimed by the Bills? Someone did.
I think the only one I've seen is Wiley. Maybe. Jalen Kimber.
Yes. Jalen Kimber.
Yes. So two guys have been signed to other teams' practice squads. I think that tells you what the league thought about the Titans' depth on their roster.
Yeah, I think it's all right.
It's not a surprise. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you want to text or call, our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tune in to ESPN 94.9 The Fan this Sunday at 2 p.m. for our college football game of the week, Virginia Tech versus South Carolina, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurant, Circus Sportsbook, Kentucky, and Macero in 12 South. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. When we come back, we will wrap up our Titans conversation for the day with a conversation about the captains. I know Connor put out a tweet about Cam Ward being a captain. We'll let him speak his mind coming up next. Then Andrew Allegretta joins us at 10:30. Jake Lyman, Connor Newt, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.
What's it say that Cam, obviously a rookie, gets elected or voted in as one of the captains, and I wonder if he could draw any comparisons with Joe doing the same thing as his rookie.
Yeah, you earn that, right? Cam's definitely earned it. The leadership he's shown over the course of his time here from the offseason through training camp, those guys have a lot of respect for him. And, you know, traditionally your quarterback tends to be a captain. That's just sort of how it works. But I do think all the qualities that he has shown as a leader are very much deserving of a captaincy. So, not surprised by any stretch. I think it was pretty close to unanimous for him. So that was good to see.
That was head coach Brian Callahan talking about the decision to name Cam Ward a captain as a rookie, one of seven captains for the Titans who were announced on Wednesday night. Jake Lyman, Connor Newt, Parker Kelly with you. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. I mentioned yesterday, I have no problem with Cam Ward being a captain. Honestly, I think I would have been concerned if he wasn't a captain based on what we've heard about his leadership qualities and how he's viewed in the locker room. Connor, I know you have a different take on this.
Yeah, I don't like it. And I'll tell you why. Look, I get it. He was voted on by his team, and that speaks a lot to the kind of leader that Cam Ward is, and you want a leader to be your captain. That said, he is a rookie quarterback who has never taken a real NFL snap and has not seen the field. And I think maybe I'm suffering a little bit from PTSD last year when you had your first-year starter in Will Levis as your captain, and how did that go? Now, I think Cam Ward and Will Levis are completely different kinds of leaders. Cam Ward, I think, is more hands-on. He's the first guy in the building. He's the last one to leave, and good on him. Will Levis was kind of the opposite. It was all about him and how much marketing he could get from being an NFL quarterback and being the captain of the Tennessee Titans. I just think that a rookie quarterback that has never seen a real NFL game, throw the preseason away. That's not real NFL football. A rookie quarterback that has never played a real NFL game has to earn that captain patch. And you can, they're going to make the argument, and I'm sure a lot of people on the text line and Titans Twitter are going to argue with me that he's earned it in practice and the team has earned his, or he's earned the team's respect, and good on him. You can be a leader without that patch. I just think from a traditional standpoint that I understand it's the most important position in sports. The quarterback is traditionally the leader of the team, but he's a rookie. He's never played a real game. We don't know what kind of a player he is. I just don't agree with it. Now, the other captains, sure. Jeffrey Simmons, fine. Calvin Ridley, good.
Cody Barton, I think, was an easy one.
I think that's an easy
one. Morgan Cox is probably the easiest one they were able to pick.
And you could look at the argument, well, Cody Barton, this is his first year in the Titans defense. Cody Barton's an NFL veteran.
Yeah.
Cody Barton's
Hey, Connor, I have a question.
Can I finish my point?
Sure, go ahead.
Cody Barton, and I lost my train of thought because you just cut me off. Cody Barton has had success on the other, in the NFL as a defensive player. I just don't think that a rookie quarterback who has never played a real NFL snap should be given that privilege just yet. And I'm not, that's not a knock on Cam Ward. That's not a knock on the kind of player I think he can be or the kind of person I think he is right now. I just am going from more of a traditional standpoint from the NFL football fan I am. I would like to see a year of Cam Ward without that patch, a year where he earns it. And look, I know the Titans aren't the only one in the NFL that has ever done this. I mean, Caleb Williams was the captain for the Bears last year, and I think it's kind of an unwritten rule that you make the quarterback your captain. I just kind of disagree with that. That's just kind of my point.
So,
go ahead.
Do you agree that if there's a player who doesn't contribute significant playing time, do you think that they could still be a captain? Let's say there's a player who exemplifies really great leadership but is not a significant contributor to your team. Do you think that they could still be a captain?
No, because I think it needs to be a player that is a key contributor to your team. And you could make the argument Morgan Cox isn't a key contributor to the Titans. He's a special teams captain. He is probably their best player on special teams from the long snapper position. But I don't know. You look at all the other captains they have. Jeffrey Simmons is probably the best player on your roster. Calvin Ridley, Amani Hooker, Cody Barton,
Tony Pollard.
All of those guys, granted, their talent level varies, but they are all key contributors in the Titans roster. Cam Ward is going to be a key contributor in the Titans roster. And look, I just disagree with it this year. Next year, by all means, be the captain. especially if you have a great year and you're the franchise guy that you think they are. I just don't agree with it this year. And look, I have no say in whether Cam Ward is the captain or not. Clearly, he's the captain. The players like him. The team likes him. The coaching staff likes him. The front office likes him. They all voted on this. But I'm just saying, right now, on this day, August 29th, 2025, Friday, Cam Ward has never played an NFL snap. He has never seen a real NFL snap. And people will say, well, he played in the preseason. Do you count the preseason as a real NFL football game? Because I don't.
They count the stats.
The stats don't count. Records don't count. He played, what, five possessions the entire? Yeah, seven. Thank you. But I would like to see what Cam Ward is capable of before we king him and give him this crown and that patch on the shoulder. And again, it's a patch. It doesn't really mean anything in the grand scheme of things other than he goes out at the pre-game captain's meeting and he decides heads or tails. That's pretty much it. But maybe I'm reading way too much into this. I'm just saying, I don't agree with the fact that you're putting a rookie quarterback who's never played a real snap. I'm going to keep hammering that out. Never played a real snap in the NFL. We're giving him that privilege right now.
But if he was voted on by his teammates, who's to say that he shouldn't be a captain? This team's in desperate
Not me.
This team's in desperate need of leadership. So if it's your rookie, if it's your fifth-year veteran defensive tackle, who cares? This team just needs leadership. So if it's your rookie, why is it such a big deal?
Fair point, but I think you have leadership in the other captains. I think Tony Pollard's a great leader in that backfield. I think Calvin Ridley has been here long enough and can elevate Cam to be that leader. I think Jeffrey Simmons, maybe he's not the best leader, but he's your best player. And that sends a sign to the locker room that your best player is your leader and your captain. Morgan Cox is Morgan Cox. He's a special teams captain. We could throw him away.
I've been on teams, though, your best players are not always your best leaders.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think that's the case here.
Certainly, I agree.
Jeffrey Simmons is the best player, but I don't think he's the best leader. That said, what does it say to your locker room if we don't trust your best player to be your captain?
It's 5 years in a row for Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah, and it's 5 years in a row. I mean, look, he's got the gold patch now. He's got five stars. That's just how I feel.
I will make the point that Brian Callahan did say it was almost unanimous voting Cam Ward a captain, and we're not in that locker room. We don't see what Cam Ward does on a day-to-day basis. But from everything we've heard, it feels like he is a true, genuine leader. And I think last year, Will Levis was not a genuine leader. I think he tried to prop himself up to be a leader.
But he rewired his brain for that.
It wasn't natural for him. I think Cam Ward naturally comes off as a leader in that locker room. And when you hear about practice and when the offense is getting fired up and there's some juice and some energy, where's it coming from? It's coming from Cam Ward. And first of all, I will make the point, I don't think there should be seven captains. I feel like that's a...
I think you should have two on offense, two on defense, and one on special teams.
I agree. Five, I think, is the right number. Yep. I saw, I'm forgetting which team. One team put out, they only had three. One offense, one defense, one special teams. And I think that's a little low. I think it should be two on each side of the ball and special teams. But you look on that offense, yes, Calvin Ridley's a good player. Would you classify him as like your stock central casting leader, though?
No.
Not really, based on what we've heard and seen from him. Same with Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard seems like a pretty quiet guy. You can lead by example, and I'm sure Tony Pollard and Calvin Ridley both do, but they aren't your rah-rah, get the team hyped up kind of guy. It seems like Cam Ward kind of is that guy.
Yeah,
he's going to get his team going. And the offensive line, they need somebody to develop as a leader there. I'm a little surprised Zeitler maybe wasn't a captain.
Yeah.
And we haven't heard a ton from Kevin Zeitler, but he's your veteran guy on that offensive line. Typically, there is an offensive line captain. I think eventually it will be one of the young guys, Skoronski or Latham.
I was thinking Skoronski.
Who steps up and takes that role for the long haul. But I am a little surprised that Cushenberry or Zeitler wasn't named a captain.
And look, we're getting texts that are saying there's NFL veterans, some across the street, that are in full support of the move. Good on them. I mean, they're NFL veterans. I have no NFL experience whatsoever. I'm just giving you my opinion, and my opinion is that right now, on this day, Cam Ward has not played a real NFL snap. I don't think he has earned the captain's patch from an on-the-field standpoint. Now, off the field, sure. Like Parker said, like Brian Callahan said, it was pretty much unanimous that he is a leader. But I think you can he can be a leader without wearing that patch. Lead by example, kind of what you said. And I don't think, you know, I don't want to add more stress to him. I don't want him to have the stresses of being a captain. And that's probably something that he wants. And he wants to be a leader. And he wants to lead by example and make this team have this winner-take-all mentality. And good on him. But I just don't. He's a rookie quarterback. He's got a lot on his plate. He's under a microscope. He's the number one overall pick. Add captain to the list. That puts him under even more of a microscope.
If he's a natural leader, then it shouldn't be an extra stress. Now, for Will Levis, certainly, because he wasn't a natural leader. But if Cam Ward is this natural leader, which everyone says that he is, then it shouldn't be an extra stress on him.
It shouldn't, but it could be.
First rookie to be named a captain for the Titans since Marcus Mariota back in 2015. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you want to text or call, our phone line is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Vanderbilt football begins the season this Saturday at home against Charleston Southern. Catch all the action on 102.5 The Game with the pregame show starting at 4:30 and kickoff at 6 p.m. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Vanderbilt football is presented by Gary Force Acura and Smoky Mountain Tops. We will chat with the man who will be on the call for that game, Andrew Allegretta, the voice of Vanderbilt football, right after this. Jake Lyman, Connor Newt, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Connor Newt, Parker Kelly with you on this Friday, getting set for a full weekend of college football, including Vanderbilt's opener tomorrow night against Charleston Southern, 6 o'clock kick, 4:30 pregame show right here on 102.5 The Game. And we are now joined by the voice of Vanderbilt football, Andrew Allegretta, on our phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Andrew, getting excited for game one. Thanks for coming on.
Of course, Jacob Lyman. Good to talk to you.
Yes, great to talk to you. You've been around this team all throughout fall camp, couple scrimmages, getting ready for week one. What's the feeling around this Vanderbilt football program after such a year of growth last year as they look to build on it?
Well, certainly excitement and certainly optimism and anticipation. It's certainly one of the more anticipated Vanderbilt football seasons likely in the program's history. I say that cautiously, but it feels accurate. I mean, you could go back to perhaps a decade or so ago when one of those James Franklin teams was coming off a good season leading into the next season, perhaps what the program did back in the 1980s with our good friend Norm Jordan and Whit Taylor. But, you know, all things considered, to have the stadium opening tomorrow, to have a sellout, which we announced, to have Diego Pavia back, to have the SEC Coach of the Year and Clark Lee on the sideline, and have just so many critical pieces back for Vanderbilt from a season ago, it's hard to not think that this is truly an exciting moment, anticipated moment. Now they just have to do it on the field.
Yeah, you mentioned the sellout that just got announced for tomorrow. Do you feel the Vanderbilt community, the Nashville community, really rallying around this team? I mean, sometimes, you know, the old adage is if you win, they will come. It kind of feels like that's what's happening over on West End.
I think so. And if you build it, they will come. So we literally built the stadium and built the team.
Right.
It's the right moment for both of those things to have a sellout. I mean, I'm so happy for all of the people that kind of poured into this. It's not something that happened overnight. All of these plans for the stadium, the hiring of Clark Lee, it goes back 5 years, back to 2020. So you have the Alabama game last year. You have your moment. You get to lead into this season. I think probably a lot of those people, Clark especially, Diego especially, are ready to just, you know, play some football and try to, you know, continue to build and get into the flow of the season. You know, it's so hard to say, right, Jake? Like this, this city is so wonderfully big and so wonderfully complex with all of the options. Like, it never feels like any one thing owns the city. That would be ridiculous. But in terms of galvanizing the sports community in Nashville, it definitely has gathered some momentum. And to have such a gravitating figure like Diego Pavia, to have a brand new stadium and coming off a wonderful year, it clearly has motivated people that care about sports and clearly has motivated people that care about Vanderbilt football.
So, Andrew, let me ask you about Diego Pavia then. Coming off of the season he had last year and everything that circulated around this offseason, the wonderful things that happened for Vanderbilt football in the offseason and last season. What do you think you need to see from Diego Pavia tomorrow? Or, I'm sorry, yeah, tomorrow against Charleston Southern. Sorry, I'm so excited for college football. I forget my days.
Let's go.
Yes. Granted, I know it's Charleston Southern. No disrespect to them, but this is a non-conference game that Vanderbilt should win. What do you need to see from Diego Pavia tomorrow to convince you that he's still on the same level that he was on last year?
Oh, that's probably tricky to say exactly tomorrow, and so much will be learned tomorrow, Virginia Tech, South Carolina. I think I said this on the Commodore Hour, guys, back on Monday. I want to leave the stadium tomorrow night with no red flags. You know what I'm saying? What I remember, and I told this to Kevin, what I remember from a couple of years ago is that Hawaii game. And we left the stadium with a victory, but it was like, that was a little closer than we would like it to be. And it sort of became a red flag for what would happen in the following weeks and months. I want to walk out of Charleston Southern without red flags. That could be the performance of the players. That could be the health of the players. It certainly includes a victory for Vanderbilt if this season is going to move in the direction that it needs to move. I don't know that Diego Pavia needs to do any more than he's ever done. In fact, there probably is part of the way that this offense is going to go this season where Diego almost needs to do, I don't want to say less, but like if we want to have a complete offense that fixes some of the things that we felt were an issue toward the back end of last season, some of that was Diego's health. Some of that was kind of the running game getting bogged down late in the season. Diego almost needs to do less. It needs to be the functionality of the offensive line, the way the running backs perform, the way this new crew of wide receivers step up, block on the perimeter, execute the smallest details of the offense. If Diego has the same season as he did a season ago, like that, I mean, it was truly one of the greatest seasons in Vanderbilt quarterback history. Like he had 3,094 total yards of offense. That's second most by any quarterback in Vanderbilt history behind only Jay Cutler. So if he's coming back to where he was from season ago and everybody else can elevate around him, then we're probably in good shape.
Talking to Andrew Allegretta, voice of the Vanderbilt Commodore. So, Andrew, let me ask you about Eli Stowers. Obviously, we think he's one of the best tight ends in the SEC. You could make the argument he's one of the best tight ends in the nation. How important is that connection between him and Pavia to be a focal point of this offense?
I mean, it's certainly really important. I think Eli's been a little bit banged up throughout the course of camp, so we've got to make sure that he continues to stay healthy. He's a lot faster, guys, than people realize. I think he can get up to like a top speed of about 21-ish miles per hour, which is going to be in the mix of, you know, I don't want to say the fastest wide receivers, but like, you know, the dude's got wheels for his size. He's so critical, obviously, for the offense, and it's such a focal point. He can help be a cog and a distraction to open up other people in the offense too. And certainly the way that Diego and Eli interact, it goes so much more than just on the field. Clearly Eli is Diego's top and most trusted target. But for those that watched the Netflix documentary and specifically the episode that so revolved around Vanderbilt beating Alabama, you could see it off the field too, kind of the perfect yin and yang of Diego's, you know, buoyancy and bigness and confidence and kind of the steadying factor of Eli. They fit together so well. Of course, they came from New Mexico State together. It is a wonderful partnership, and certainly Vanderbilt needs both of those guys healthy.
Diego Pavia and Eli Stowers, they get all the headlines, you know, possible first-round pick and what Diego's done. But some newcomers on this team, through the transfer portal, Keanu Coate coming in from Alabama, C.J. Hurd, the safety from FAU. Either of those guys or any of the other newcomers standing out as you've seen Vandy throughout the fall camp process?
I think the position, if I'm going to go like make a prediction, which is usually a ridiculous fallacy and flaw, if I'm going to do anything remotely close to that, the position that I'm so much intrigued and optimistic and think that they could be kind of the unexpected hero or, you know, the up-and-comer of the season would be the wide receiving position in the core of wide receivers that Vanderbilt has. Junior Sherrill, of course, a local product and of 4th-and-1 fame versus Alabama, is back. Richie Hoskins, guys, has gotten better. Like, he was a lacrosse athlete coming out of high school and played, you know, small college football, caught a touchdown versus Kentucky last year. He's gotten better at route running and understanding his assignments. And they brought in, man, just some burners. Trey Richardson is really fast. He's not that big. He's 5'9", 5'10", but he's going to start on the outside because he's so fast. And he can stretch the defense just to change the defense and open up windows, guys. And there's this kid, Caleb Barnett, who's a freshman, and he's electrically fast as well. And he probably only stands 5'8"-ish. And then you've got a trusted source in Trent Hudson, who came from New Mexico State to Mississippi State to Vanderbilt that Diego knows. You can add pieces out of the tight end room like Bryson Coleman and Cole Spence. I think a position that could pop unexpectedly in a positive way for Vanderbilt would be that receiving crew.
One more for you, Andrew. We've kind of talked about the transition from last season to this season. You had a great year last year, one of the best in Vanderbilt football history, and now you move on to this season. If you're Clark Lee, looking at the microscope that Vanderbilt is under this year, not just by the SEC, but by the nation with Diego Pavia, and obviously people have watched the SEC documentary, what is the message to Vanderbilt this year to sustain success from last year?
So I'm going to give you a little bit of a coach answer. But I do think it's kind of how they go about it. And it's not just Clark. I think it's most coaches and most teams. Like, I think a lot of the – I don't think necessarily, like, individual teams and games always totally translate one season, one game to the next. Like, if you do or don't execute in an individual player moment, like it doesn't really matter. I think program momentum over the course of years certainly matters externally. But like 75% of the roster is back, guys, right? Somewhere in that territory. 75% of the production or whatever. That's 25% that's new. You still have to figure out how that 25% interacts with the 75%. And you've got to figure out how the 75% interacts with the new 25%. And you don't know how that's going to work until you're actually under the pressure and the stress of the game. My point of all of that is, I think Clark has learned, and the coaching staff has been really good with Jerry Kill and Tim Back. Like, you've got to focus on the smallest stuff that's right in front of you. Like, can you execute today? Can you execute the plays that you need to today to be successful? The how does the program sustain momentum year over year? It only matters if you can execute in the moment to take care of your business. Like, I had a coach once tell me, like, people get so fixated, and this was years ago as a basketball coach, like, people get fixated on how teams change from year to year. And he's like, that's not really everything. It's more how you adjust and adapt throughout the course of this season. You're going to deal with injuries. You're going to deal with games that you don't expect positively and negatively. Like, how do you handle all of the in-season stuff that truly can define the success of a season? It's not just what roster building did you do from one year to the next, because you're going to get thrown curveballs that you have to handle well in the season. So I'm not externally, I'm right there with you. Like, the program has to sustain momentum year over year, but to execute it, to get to that point, coaches drill down on like the day to day, and you just have to, because if you get caught up in the other stuff, you're toast. So I think Clark has been really good about saying, let's execute the play. Let's execute today. And that's how you sustain it year over year.
Andrew, really appreciate you taking some time with us. Can't believe the season is already here, but excited to be up there with you and Norm and Kevin tomorrow. 4:30 pregame, 6:00 kickoff. Vandy taking on Charleston Southern. Andrew, thanks for coming on.
As always, guys, thank you.
Andrew Allegretta, voice of Vanderbilt football. Again, you can listen to the broadcast right here on 102.5. The game, Vandy starting its season tomorrow evening against Charleston Southern. We'll take a break. We'll react to what Andrew had to say and talk a little more about Vandy's outlook this season right after this. Jake Lyman, Connor Newt, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5 The Game. Wrapping up the second hour on this Friday as we take you into Labor Day weekend. Jake Lyman, Connor Newt, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5 The Game. Great conversation with Andrew Allegretta, voice of Vanderbilt football, as the Commodores start their season tomorrow night. You can listen to that broadcast right here on 102.5 The Game, 6:00 kick, 4:30 pregame show. For Vanderbilt, the schedule's tough. Like, we've gone through it. It's not an easy schedule. You got to play Alabama on the road. You have to play Texas on the road. And you have to play South Carolina on the road. This first stretch of the season is really important. Obviously, you expect to win tomorrow against Charleston Southern. You've also got Utah State and Georgia State coming in. So you would hope that those are wins, all at home against non-power conference opponents. Mixed in there, you've got back-to-back weeks at Virginia Tech, at South Carolina. I think if you split those and you go 4-1 heading into that Alabama game, I think you feel pretty good about your chance to go to a bowl game, having home games against your Kentucky Wildcats.
Oh, that's going to be a massacre.
Auburn.
Not and for me, for them.
I do have to say, I underestimated Missouri, and it was against Central Arkansas last night, so you can't take too much from it.
Right.
But, man, they blew out Central Arkansas last night. So, but those are three games you think you could win. You win two out of the three, you're bowl eligible again, which, for Vanderbilt, that is always a good season if you can get to six wins.
I think for Vanderbilt, it's you've talked the talk, now you got to walk the walk. Yes, you have a tough schedule. But guess what? You're bulletin board material now. For Alabama, you've talked about them all offseason. They want you. For Tennessee, you've talked about them all season. They want you. LSU is coming here. They want you because you were somewhat competitive with them last year in their own home stadium. All these teams that are so tough to beat. Texas, you were competitive with Texas last year here in Nashville.
Only lost by three.
Now you got to go up there or down there. They're south. You got to go down there and compete with them. They want you. You are on the map. Like it or not, last year put you on the map in the SEC because of not the things you said, but the things you went out there and do and did. As soon as you beat number one Alabama here in Nashville at home, you were put on the map. This was already a successful season once that happened. And anything after that was kind of just a bonus if you're a Vanderbilt fan.
Yeah, I mean, you are not sneaking up on anybody this year.
Now. No.
Like, there's not going to be a team like Alabama who was, you know, Alabama was coming off that Georgia win, that crazy game where 17-year-old Ryan Williams was splitting defenders and back juking and going 70 yards for touchdowns. Like, crazy game. You get the win. You're the number one team in the country. You come and face a Vandy team coming off a bye, and you got punched in the mouth, and you ended up losing. This year, you aren't going to have the advantage of sneaking up on teams because teams know that you're legit now. Vandy is coming into this season as a legit SEC squad. Like, they've got the talent now. You've got to go out there and you got to play your best game against some of these opponents. And early on, like, I think they're going to go into Virginia Tech and I think they're going to win that game.
Yeah.
That South Carolina game becomes huge at that point. If you're 2-0 heading to Columbia to face what I expect will be a 2-0 South Carolina team.
There's a common denominator there. I just can't put my finger on it.
You can make the assumption, my thoughts on the team they both play. I think that becomes a massive game because guess what? You win that game, all of a sudden you're undefeated heading into that Alabama game.
Yeah.
You're probably ranked. Like, there is a path for Vandy to put themselves right in the thick of things early on in the season. Now, the stretch of games that could knock them down is that stretch in October where I think it's Alabama, you have LSU at home, you got Texas on the road, and there's one more game in there. It might be Missouri at home. So I think those are the four you've got in.
Is it Auburn? Don't they?
It could be Auburn.
Is there late in the plains last year?
No, late in the season they play Kentucky, Auburn, Tennessee, I think.
Okay.
So I think it is Missouri mixed in there.
Yeah, you're
like,
right.
Like, that stretch of games, it's going to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go in 4-1 at minimum, you split those games, you're in a really good spot. So I think Vandy, we've got to see it. We've got to see them build off of last year. But there's a path early in the season for them to put themselves in a really good spot heading into that Alabama game.
That's why I was so interested to ask Andrew, you know, what does Pavia and the offense need to do tomorrow to set the tone? And his answer was actually the opposite of what I thought he was going to say. He said, do less. Just be comfortable and go with the flow.
Right.
I was thinking he was going to say, and this is what I would do, set the tone.
Yeah.
Punch him in the mouth.
Get out of there early. Look, if you can be up 31-0 at halftime, you can pull your starters.
Look, no disrespect to Charleston Southern. I'm sure it's a great school and a good program. But
they went 1-11 last year.
I'm sure it's a great school and they got great students there. But this is SEC football. And Vanderbilt, like we said, you're on the map.
Right. You gotta go prove that you can squash the bug.
I think Vanderbilt needs to just go guns a-blazing tomorrow. Set the tone. That way all these SEC teams look tomorrow and they're looking at film and they're like, Vanderbilt just beat Charleston Southern 81-0.
Yep.
I mean, they may be a problem. This is extremely hypothetical. 81
zip.
Yeah.
Playing on freshman difficulty.
Yeah. I mean, that's as hypothetical as it gets. I don't expect that to be the final score. But what I'm trying to get at is put on a show.
Yeah.
You got a sellout crowd. Put on a show for those fans and then make other teams around the SEC worry about you. Make them circle you on their schedule. I am 99.999% sure that Alabama has you circled on their calendar in red ink.
Yep.
I bet Tennessee has you circled on their calendar in orange ink. You got to put on a show and back up your talk.
Yeah.
And that starts tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, it could be easy to look past Charleston Southern to your two back-to-back Power Conference road games, but I think it does help. It's the first game of the year. I'm sure they're itching to get out there, and we'll see what Vandy can do. Again, 6 o'clock kick tomorrow against Charleston Southern. You can listen to the broadcast starting right here at 4:30 with Andrew Allegretta, Norman Jordan, and Kevin Ingram. We'll take a quick break. Again, we're going to spend the whole last hour just whipping around college football. There are enough games this week that we can spend a full hour going through all the big ones. We will do that. Coming up next to wrap up the show, Jake Lyman, Connor Newt, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5 The Game.